They were up early the next morning, fortified by a big breakfast and a couple of pots of strong black coffee. Bo and Scratch got the stage ready to roll, backing the big strong horses that made up the six-horse hitch into their harnesses. Ponderosa supervised, watching closely and telling them everything they did wrong, at least to his way of thinking. Bo and Scratch amiably complied with his suggestions. While they were doing that, Gil walked down to the post office and returned with the mail pouch that contained letters going to Chino Valley, Cottonwood, and all points farther along. He placed it in the boot under the seat, closed, and locked the latch. He then handed the key to Bo, who tucked it into the pocket of his black coat.
Be careful with that.
Don't worry.
With that done, Bo climbed onto the seat and drove the coach around the building, swinging it around so that it was facing east and bringing it to a stop in front of the Adobe station. It wasn't quite time for the scheduled departure, and the passengers hadn't arrived yet. Scratch walked through the building and came out onto the porch, carrying not only the shotgun that Ponderosa usually took along on these trips, but also his own Winchester.
Can't have too many guns.
Better to have them, not need them, than need them and not have them.
Scratch set the rifle and the shotgun on the floorboard, then opened the door on the side of the coach that faced toward the building. Abigail, Gil, and Ponderosa gathered on the porch. Abigail had a hopeful expression on her face this morning, although concern lurked in her eyes, too. Dave never had come home the night before. According to what Ponderosa had told Bo and Scratch, this wasn't the first time that had happened, but it still worried Abigail. Right now, though, she was smiling.
Here come the Carsons.
Thatcher Carson, Claire, and Noah walked up to the stagecoach. Bo and Scratch looked along the street and saw three people approaching. The man wore a gray tweed suit and a hat of a darker gray shade. He was slender and in his 30s, with dark hair and a lean, intelligent face. He carried two valises. His wife was a little younger, a pretty blonde, tending toward plumpness. The little boy with them was around 8 years old and had inherited his mother's fair hair and good looks. He stared up in awe at the horses and at the two tough-looking Texans. Scratch gave them a big, charming smile and tugged on the brim of his Stetson.
Well, morning, folks. You ready to hit the trail for Cottonwood?
We certainly are. If you'll show me where to put these bags.
I'll do better than that. Let me take them. I'll just put them right back here in the rear boot where they'll be safe.
I hope we'll all be safe. I don't mind telling you, I'm a little worried about this trip. We wouldn't be taking it if my wife's sister weren't so ill. If those bandits try to hold up the stage...
Don't you worry about bandits. I'm Scratch Morton, and that hombre handling the range is Bo Creel. We've been fighting bandits longer than you've been alive, young fella. Yeah, we tussled with Al Hooch from the Mississippi to the Pacific Ocean, from the Rio Grande to the Milk River way up yonder to Montana. We've swapped lead with bank robbers, train robbers, rustlers, renegade Comanches, gun runners, Mexican bandidos, river pirates, and every other kind of no-good varmint you can think of.
So what you're saying is that the two of you attract trouble?
What my partner there is saying, Mr. Carson, is that we're still here and all those lawbreakers aren't. We'll keep you and your family safe. You have my word on that.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Creel. I suppose that will have to be good enough. Come along, Claire. You too, Noah.
The little boy was even more awestruck after Scratch's recital. His father had to speak to him again before he finally climbed into the stagecoach after his mother. Carson boarded last, his weight making the coach sway a little on its thorough braces as he climbed in. Scratch slammed the door and hauled himself up onto the box next to Bo. He picked up the shotgun and held it across his knees, at the same time resting a foot on the Winchester's barrel to keep it from sliding around. Bo reached for the brake lever and released it.
See you tomorrow evening.
Bo lifted the reins. Abigail lifted a hand to wave farewell, as did Ponderosa with his uninjured arm. Gil's hands were in his pockets, and he didn't move them, nor did he lose his dour frown.
Get up there.
Bo and Scratch were both grinning in anticipation, though, as Bo called out to the horses and slapped the lines against their backs. The team surged forward, pulling against its harness, and the stagecoach lurched into motion, rolling down the road out of Red Butte. It had been a while since Bo had driven a stagecoach, but the knack came back to him quickly. It was just a matter of adjusting to the rhythms of the team, knowing when to shout at them, when to slap their backs with the leathers, when to pop the whip above their ears. The rocking of the coach was different from the gait of riding a horse, but within a few miles after leaving Red Butte, it felt as natural as air and water. The road was crushed caliche in some places, hard-packed dirt in others. The hooves of the team raised dust everywhere, so Bo and Scratch both pulled their bandanas up to cover nose and mouth and keep the dust out.
We look like banditos our own self!
Masked hombres, that's us.
Inside the coach, Claire Carson and her son Noah rode on the rear seat, facing forward, while Thatcher Carson had the backward-facing seat. They had pulled the shades over the windows to keep out the sun glare and some of the dust, but it was impossible to keep out all the dust. The temperature rose quickly inside the coach, too. Claire smiled bravely, though, whenever her husband looked at her.
Can I ride up in the driver's seat with Mr. Creel and Mr. Morton?
I don't think there's room for you, son.
And it might be dangerous.
I wouldn't be, and I don't take up much room.
We won't hear any more about it, Noah. Do you understand?
I never get to do anything fun.
Up top, Scratch turned his head to look behind them at the plume of dust that followed the coach.
Anybody who's looking can see that for miles around.
I know, but there's no way to avoid it unless I pull these horses back to the slowest walk possible. Then it would take us darn near a week to get to Cottonwood instead of a day.
Yeah, I reckon. You think anybody's watching?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Think they'll hit us?
Don't know. Could be nothing.
You know, I'd feel better about this if there wasn't a woman and a kid in there.
Keep your eyes peeled.
Scratch didn't say anything, just gave a curt nod. Nothing had happened by the time they crossed Hell Creek and reached the first relay station, which was nothing more than a corral, a shed, and an adobe jacal where the hostler lived. The man helped them switch the teams. Then the stage rolled on. Scratch pulled his turnip watch from his pocket, flipped it open, and checked the time.
We're on schedule. Ought to make Chino Valley a little afternoon, just like we're supposed to. If nothing happens between here and there, of course.
The terrain was flat for the most part, with only the occasional gentle rise. A few buttes and mesas were visible in the distance, both north and south of the road. From time to time, the coach rattled across plank bridges built over dry washes. A greenish-purple line on the horizon far to the east represented the mountains just beyond the Verde River, which curved down from the northwest. Cottonwood was in the foothills, right on the river. The stagecoach would reach it late that afternoon, barring any delays. Despite the taut-stretched nerves that both Bo and Scratch were experiencing, the next leg of the trip passed without incident, other than meeting a freight wagon headed toward Red Butte. The two men on the box scowled at Bo and Scratch as the two vehicles passed, and even though the Texans didn't recognize the men, they noticed the hostility.
Those fellas seem to know who we are.
They must work for Rutledge. He's the only one carrying freight into Red Butte, as far as I know. They've probably seen us around town, even though we didn't pay any attention to them.
Yeah, that'd be my guess. At least they didn't start shooting at us.
They wouldn't do that without orders from Rutledge. And I'm guessing that he's not to that point in his war with Abigail yet.
Bo didn't have to elaborate. Both of them knew that if the situation in Red Butte continued to deteriorate, gunplay would break out sooner or later. The stagecoach reached Chino Valley while the sun was almost directly overhead. It was a small but bustling settlement on the road between Prescott and Williams. The station here was larger, with a barn and corral and an adobe building where passengers could get something to eat and rest for a while. There was even a short bar on one side of the big main room. Scratch eyed it thirstily as they came in, but Bo shook his head. It would be a long, hot afternoon, and they didn't need any whiskey muddling their minds even more than the heat and dust already would. Several Mexican hostlers worked here, as well as the station manager. The hostlers would tend to changing the teams. The manager's wife, a stout Mexican woman, had already dished up beans and tortillas for the Carson family, who sat on a bench beside the long table that dominated the room. Bo and Scratch sat down on the other side of the table, and the woman brought plates of food for them.
You got any chilies? Hotter the weather, the hotter the peppers, I always say.
Sí, señor. Un momento.
She came back with a bowl full of stubby green peppers. Scratch picked one up, took a bite off the end, and chewed. His eyes began to water, but he nodded in satisfaction.
That's mighty good, ma'am. Gracias.
When everyone had eaten, rested for a short time, and then walked around a little to stretch their legs, or in the case of Mrs. Carson, her limbs, the passengers boarded the coach again, and Bo and Scratch climbed onto the box.
Boy, that kid was shoveling in beans. I'm glad I'm riding up here, not in there. Gonna be a long way to Cottonwood for those folks.
A siesta would have been nice, but there was no time for that. The passengers would probably doze off, despite the heat and dust and rocking motion of the coach. But Bo and Scratch had to remain alert. The suspicion that there could be somebody waiting up ahead to ambush the stagecoach and kill them made that fairly easy. No other passengers had gotten on at Chino Valley, so it was still just the five of them. They would reach another relay station around mid-afternoon, change horses again, and then push on to Cottonwood, arriving there not long before dusk. Bo and Scratch would spend the night at the station there, then start back to Red Butte in the morning. The plan called for Thatcher Carson to go with them, leaving his wife and son in Cottonwood for the time being. He would return for them later, after his sister-in-law's medical crisis had passed. The mountains were actually visible on the horizon now, not just the line they had been earlier. The landscape was gradually changing. There were more hills, although they were still small and rolling, and the browns and tans and reds of the mostly arid country behind them had begun to shade toward green as the vegetation increased. The arroyos they crossed over now sometimes had a little water in them. The road still ran mostly straight, curving only to avoid hills and ridges. As the coach approached two such hills, low, rocky prominences flanking the trail to north and south, the prickling sensation on the back of Bo's neck suddenly increased.
I don't like the looks of that up yonder. Those hills are tailor-made for an ambush. Better get your rifle.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing.
Scratch bent over to trade the shotgun for the Winchester that still lay on the floorboard at their feet. Just as Scratch leaned forward, a slug ricocheted off the brass rail that ran around the coach's roof. Reaching for the rifle had saved Scratch's life, because the slug had torn through the space where his head had been a heartbeat earlier. Scratch snatched up the Winchester and brought it to his shoulder as he straightened. His eyes saw the puff of smoke just above one of the rocks on the hillside to the left. He fired twice in that direction, his hand a blur as it worked the rifle's loading lever between shots.
Whoa there!
Meanwhile, Bo hauled back hard on the reins and called out to the horses as he began turning them. Running away from trouble went against the grain for him, but he knew that he would be risking the passengers' lives even more if he plowed ahead stubbornly and tried to race the stagecoach through the gauntlet between those two hills. He suspected that several bushwhackers were hidden up there behind the rocks.
Bo, I wouldn't do that if I was you!
When Bo twisted his head around to look behind them, he saw why his partner said that. Half a dozen men on horseback were pounding toward them a couple of hundred yards back up the road. Powder smoke already spurted from the guns in their hands, even though the range was too far for a Colt to represent any real threat. The attackers would close in quickly, though, so Bo couldn't go back the way they had come. The terrain was too rugged to head out across country with the stage. Straight ahead was the only way open to them. Right under the guns of those bushwhackers, who were firing from both hills now, as Bo cracked the whip and sent the team lunging forward again.
Keep him busy as you can!
Noah!
Inside the coach, Claire Carson clutched her son closer to her at the sudden stop and then the jolting start. Her husband's jaw tightened and his face grew pale as he began to hear the popping of shots over the thunderous pounding of hoofbeats.
Thatcher, what is it?
We're under attack.
By outlaws or maybe Indians?
Outlaws, most certainly. The Indians haven't been a threat around here for several years.
Carson reached under his coat and brought out a pistol that he carried in a shoulder holster.
Thatcher!
Don't worry, dear. I know how to use it. I deal with enough money and gold at the mine that I carry a gun most of the time.
You never told me that!
I didn't want to worry you.
Claire was worried now, that was for sure. She looked positively terrified. She hugged Noah close against her, even though he looked like he wanted to wriggle free and stick his head out the window so he could see what was going on. Up on the box, Bo had the horses moving faster than they had so far on this journey. The animals stretched out in a gallop, leaning forward and straining at their harness. Speed was their only real chance now. It was a lot more difficult to hit a swiftly moving target. Beside him, Scratch kept up a continuous fire, swiveling to right and left so that he could pepper both hillsides with 4440 slugs. Powder smoke rolled over the slopes now as the bushwhackers poured lead down at the stagecoach. Scratch figured there were at least half a dozen riflemen hidden on each hill, and he didn't hold out much hope of actually hitting any of them with his shots. They had good cover behind those rocks, but he wanted to come close enough to make them duck every now and then and slow down their volleys. And it was always possible that one of his slugs would find the mangy hide of a bushwhacker. Bo hoped the Carsons were keeping their heads down as he sent the old Concord jolting and careening into the trail directly between the two hills. He realized something. The riflemen weren't shooting at the horses. Their fire seemed to be directed for the most part at him and Scratch. If this was a regular holdup, they would have been more concerned with stopping the coach, and killing the leaders of the team would have accomplished that in a hurry. The possibility that he and Scratch were the real targets was intriguing, but Bo didn't have time to ponder it now.
Get up there! Go, get up!
The coach was drawing past the hills now. The bushwhacker lead came more and more from behind. They had run the gauntlet and come through alive and possibly even unharmed. He hoped the same was true of the passengers.
You hit?
Nope, you?
Not yet.
Bo turned to glance over his shoulder again. The outlaw riders were still behind them and had narrowed the gap some. Not only that, but now mounted men were emerging from the rocks and coming down the hillsides to fall in behind the other riders and join in the pursuit. A few of the riflemen were still up there, firing after the stagecoach. Another bullet spanged off the brass fittings. They wanted him and Scratch dead, all right, Bo thought, and they were going to be stubborn about it, too. This chase had just begun. Scratch twisted around on the seat and saw the pursuers thundering after the coach, too.
I'll try to discourage the varmints!
Scratch brought the rifle up. He braced an elbow on the coach roof, but that didn't do much to steady his aim, the way the vehicle was bouncing around. Scratch began firing anyway, emptying the Winchester of its remaining rounds in a hurry. He was firing blind for the most part because of the dust cloud boiling up from the coach's wheels and trailing behind the Concord. But he caught glimpses of the riders through gaps in the dust, and during one such fleeting look, he was rewarded by the sight of a horse tumbling down and sending its rider sailing through the air.
Yeehaw! Got one! Don't know if I hit a man or a horse, but both of them went down.
Either way, that's one less chasing us.
Bo continued urging the team on to its greatest speed. Scratch began reloading the Winchester with cartridges from his pocket, thumbing the rounds into the loading gate with deft, practiced ease, even on top of a wildly jouncing stagecoach. Inside the coach, Thatcher Carson leaned forward, getting ready to stick his head and arm out the window so he could take part in the running fight. Claire still had one arm around Noah, but her free hand shot out and grabbed her husband's sleeve, pulling him back.
Thatcher, what are you doing?
I should help Mr. Creel and Mr. Morton fight off those desperados. I'm a decent shot. I've practiced quite a bit out at the mine.
But you might be wounded or even killed!
We've already run that risk. I probably won't be in as much danger now as we all were just a short time ago.
All right, but be careful!
Carson took his hat off, slid closer to the window, and leaned out. Since he was riding in the front seat, facing backward, he didn't even have to turn around. All he had to do was stick his arm and head out the window and start firing at the pursuers. The wind whipped through his hair, leaving it in wild disarray as he squeezed off several shots.
Daggone! That Eastern dude's getting in on the fun! I don't reckon he'll hit much of anything, but you never know!
The horsemen were only about 50 yards behind the stage now, close enough so that Scratch could tell they wore masks. Despite that, he had no doubt they were Rance Judson's men. Whether or not they had any connection with Jared Rutledge, or with Dave Sutherland for that matter, Scratch didn't know and didn't particularly care. Bo could figure all of that out when the time came. Right now, Scratch just wanted to ventilate as many of the ornery buzzards as he could. Beside Scratch on the seat, Bo longed to draw his Colt, turn around, and blaze away at the pursuers just like his partner was doing. All of his attention had to remain focused on driving the stagecoach, though. He had to keep the team under control, yet still moving at top speed. If they ran away wildly, there was no telling where the coach might wind up. it could leave the road and crash in a gully or overturn. Scratch saw another of the riders clutch at his shoulder and fall back. The wounded hombre was out of the fight, but that still left almost a dozen men chasing the stagecoach. Thatcher Carson had emptied his pistol. He ducked back inside the coach, dug fresh cartridges out of his coat pocket, and began fumbling them into the cylinder, trying not to drop any of the bullets as he did so. On the opposite seat, Claire and Noah still looked frightened, but pride was visible on the boy's face too, along with excitement. This was the most action-packed few moments of his young life, and he was looking at his father with new eyes. His pa was no longer just a dull fellow who spent his days adding up long strings of figures and account books. Now he was a gunfighter. Carson stuck his head and arm out the window again and saw that the masked riders had drawn even closer. A bullet struck the coach roof just above Carson and showered splinters down on him. He ducked back for a second.
Thatcher, are you hurt?
I'm fine.
Squinting against the dust and wind that stung his eyes, Carson leaned out the window again, thrust the pistol toward the outlaws, and squeezed off a couple of shots. Amazingly, one of the men in the front rank of riders tumbled from his saddle. The man behind him tried to avoid trampling him, but as a result, that man got his horse tangled with another man's mount, and suddenly they were down too, the horses rolling and flailing their hooves in a welter of dust. Carson couldn't see what happened to the riders, but he was sure it couldn't have been anything good. Up on the seat, Scratch was reloading the Winchester again when Carson fired, and he had glanced up in time to see several of the pursuers take a wicked spill.
That dude's a fighting fool! He just knocked two or three of them down!
Maybe we got a chance after all. How close are they?
Mighty close!
See if you can do some damage with that scatter gun!
Scratch reached down to the floorboard and picked up the shotgun, which he had been holding in place until now with a foot. He set the Winchester down instead.
Put one of those big clodhoppers of yours on this rifle!
Bo complied as Scratch started to climb over the back of the seat onto the roof.
What the devil are you doing?
Get a little closer!
On his belly, Scratch slid along the roof of the stagecoach until his head was over the rear boot. Blinking and squinting against the dust, he made out the shapes of several pursuers closing in on the coach. They probably thought they could get close enough to grab hold, climb on, and throw him and Bo off. They were in for a buckshot surprise. The dumb varmints were bunched up close together, so Scratch let them draw nearer and nearer, until finally they were close enough to spot him lying on top of the coach with the greener pointed in their direction. He saw their eyes widen in shock, and they started trying to pull away, but they were too late. The men were swept out of the saddle and crashed to the ground, looking like bloody rag dolls. The horses managed to gallop on for a few yards before collapsing. Scratch broke the shotgun, dumped the empties, and shoved fresh shells into the barrels. He snapped the weapon closed and unleashed another double load of buckshot. But the other outlaws had seen what happened and were already falling back. The second shotgun blast knocked one man out of his saddle, but that was all. Now there were only about half a dozen of the pursuers left, and they might be thinking better of continuing the chase.
Pass me the Winchester!
Bo did so, and Scratch took the rifle and began trying to convince the remaining pursuers that it wasn't worth continuing. That did it. The masked riders peeled away, slowing down and abandoning their pursuit. They had already paid a high price in their attempt to kill the Texans, and none of the others wanted to throw their lives away.
They're falling back! Better not slow down for a ways, though!
I don't intend to!
Scratch crawled back to the front of the coach and slid down into the seat, bringing the shotgun and the Winchester with him.
Hey, you folks all right in there?
We're fine! What happened to those men?
They gave up a little chuck out of here. We fought them off, Mr. Carson.
Inside the coach, Thatcher Carson nodded in satisfaction and slumped back against the seat. Claire saw blood dripping from the fingers of his left hand.
Ah! Thatcher, you're hurt! Driver! Driver, Mr. Creel, please stop!
Bo heard the woman's frightened cries and pulled back on the reins a little, slowing the team but not stopping it.
See if you can find out how bad he's hurt.
Scratch nodded. He swung off the seat, reaching down and placing one boot on the foot rail that they used when climbing onto the coach. He hung onto the rail around the roof with his hands.
Hey, kid! Open that door!
Noah Carson slipped out of his mother's grasp and twisted the latch on the door. It swung open. Scratch got his other foot inside the coach, shifted a hand to the door, and hauled himself inside. He wound up sprawled on the floor at Mrs. Carson's feet.
Beg pardon, ma'am.
Scratch pulled himself onto the seat next to Carson.
Let me take a look at your arm, partner.
It's nothing. Just a scratch.
I reckon I'd be a better judge of that than you, friend. That being my name and all.
Scratch saw where the bloodstain started on Carson's upper arm. He pulled out his folding knife, opened it, and cut away the sleeves of coat and shirt.
Now that looks worse than it really is, ma'am. Bullet went in and right back out. Didn't take nothing with it but a little chunk of meat. We'll plug up the holes to stop the bleeding and your husband will be fine. Ought to see a doctor at Cottonwood and let him clean it up good, though.
Of course. Would you like me to tear off some of my petticoat to use for bandages?
That'd be just about perfect. I'll avert my gaze.
It didn't take long to get Carson's wounded arm patched up. As Scratch tied the last of the makeshift bandages in place, he saw that the Easterner had passed out. Mrs. Carson noticed, too.
Oh, is he?
Just fainted from loss of blood. He spilled a heap of it, but he'll be fine with a few days' rest.
But he was going back to Red Butte tomorrow. He had something important coming up at the mine.
I reckon that'll just have to wait. I expect the Sawbones and Cottonwood won't want him traveling for a little while.
Trade places with me, Mr. Morton. I'd like to sit next to my husband.
Oh, yeah, sure thing, ma'am.
Once they had traded places, Claire pillowed her husband's head against her bosom. That made Carson a lucky hombre, Scratch thought, even if he did have to get shot first. Scratch found himself sitting next to the little boy.
I heard some really loud noises up on the roof.
Yeah, that was me shooting a shotgun.
Did you get any of the miscreants?
What? Oh, them fellows who was chasing us? Yeah, I blasted three of them out of their saddles first go round, but only got one the next time.
You killed four men? Just like that?
Noah! You shouldn't sound so enthused about it.
Well, ma'am, when some hombres are trying their damnedest to kill me and I get around to killing them first, I'm usually a mite enthused about it my own self. But we guess we best not talk about that, youngster. Or the fact that your pa did for some of the varmints, too.
Really?
Oh, he sure did. I'll tell you about it later when we get to Cottonwood.
Everything all right in there?
Yeah! You need me to climb back up there?
Nah, I'll let you know if I see any more trouble headed our way.
I feel a mighty like royalty riding inside this way. Carry on, driver! Carry on!
Even Claire smiled a little at the Texan's antics. They reached another relay station shortly after that, so Scratch's ride didn't last very long. Thatcher Carson regained consciousness while they were stopped to change teams, but he wasn't awake for very long before falling into a natural sleep as he leaned against his wife. Bo and Scratch warned the hostler at the relay station to be on the lookout for the men who had ambushed the coach, although neither of them thought the outlaws would try to follow them on to Cottonwood. Running the horses so hard had actually gained a little time, so the stagecoach arrived at its destination a few minutes ahead of schedule. Cottonwood was a nice little town on the western bank of the Verde River. The stream was lined with the trees that gave the settlement its name. Wooded hills surrounded it. There was a deputy sheriff's office at Cottonwood, although the county seat was at Prescott, a good long ways to the southwest. It didn't take long for news of the attack on the stagecoach to get around town, and when the deputy heard, he came down to the stage station to talk to Bo and Scratch. They had already taken Thatcher Carson to the local doctor's office and turned him over to the physician. They answered the deputy's questions, telling him about the ambush, and stating bluntly that they thought Rance Judson was behind it.
That damn Judson! We've been trying to corral him for months now with no luck.
You can ride out there and try to pick up their tracks if you want.
Well, I'll have to wire the sheriff first and see what he wants me to do. It might take a posse out there tomorrow. Too late in the day now to start following the trail anyway.
When the deputy had gone back to his office, Scratch shook his head and looked quizzically at Bo.
You know he's not going to go after Judson's bunch. Now, how come you didn't tell him where we think that hideout is?
Because we don't know for sure yet. And if the hideout is on top of that butte, any posse that came within rifle range would likely be slaughtered. We need to find out more before we call in the law.
In other words, we're going to give Judson even more reason to want us dead than he had when he come after us today?
That's about the size of it. What's the matter? Don't you like having a target painted on your back?
I guess you'd think I'd be used to it by now, wouldn't you?
The stage station in Cottonwood was larger and more comfortably appointed than the one in Chino Valley. It not only had a dining room, but also a couple of rooms in the back furnished with cots where the driver and shotgun guard could sleep. The manager was a tall, spare man named Olmsted, who had been working for the Sutherland Stagecoach Line ever since it began. Like Will Sutherland and Ponderosa Pine, he had worked for Butterfield's Overland Express at one time. Olmsted told this to Bo and Scratch over dinner in the station dining room that night.
If you ask me, the sheriff ought to put a dozen deputies armed for bear in one of these coaches and run it back and forth until Judson's gang jumps it and gets the surprise of their lives.
Yeah, I reckon it'd be a mite crowded inside that coach, though.
And for another thing, the sheriff would have a hard time doing that without Judson finding out about it ahead of time. I got a feeling Judson has spies here in Cottonwood, as well as in Chino Valley and Red Butte. I never heard of a really successful outlaw who didn't have some of the common people helping him, either for a share of the loot or just because they admire him.
There's nothing admirable about Rance Judson. He's a killer and a thief.
So were Frank and Jesse James. But that didn't stop people from lending them a hand whenever they needed it.
I still say that somebody needs to do something about Judson and his gang before they ruin things for everybody in these parts. The settlements will never grow without reliable stagecoach and freight service. Well, unless a railroad comes through. And I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Somebody will put a stop to Judson's gang sooner or later. And Scratch and I will be doing our best to see that the stagecoaches get through safely. You mentioned freight lines. Have Jared Rutledge's wagons been hit fairly often?
Often enough that it's worrisome. Although, why I'd worry about a skunk like Rutledge who wants to put Mrs. Sutherland out of business is beyond me. I guess I just feel sorry for the folks in Red Butte who'll be without supplies if Rutledge gives up and moves on somewhere else.
Now, Rutledge didn't strike me as the sort of hombre who'd give up very easy. Seemed about as stubborn as a mule, in fact.
Oh, he is. He wants the stage line and the mail contract as well as his freight business. But no matter how stubborn a fella is, he can't just go on losing money forever.
Rutledge is losing money?
Well, I don't know for sure. He sure doesn't share his account books with me or anything like that. But the way his freight hauling has fallen off since Judson's gang moved into the area, I don't see how he could be making any money. He never made anything on that one stagecoach of his with its one run each week. He does that just to spite Mrs. Sutherland, if you ask me.
Bo and Scratch looked at each other, and both Texans were frowning in thought. Abigail Sutherland was convinced that Jared Rutledge was tied in somehow with the outlaws, but from everything Olmsted had said, that sounded mighty far-fetched. Really, nothing they had come across since riding into these parts indicated that Rutledge would come out ahead by siding with Rance Judson. Unless he was after something completely different that nobody knew about yet. Bo, Scratch, and Olmsted chewed over the situation for a while longer, without really coming to any conclusions, and then Bo and Scratch withdrew to the sleeping rooms in the back of the station and turned in. Scratch had made a few noises about wanting to hunt up a saloon and get a drink first, but the day had been a long, tiring one, and in the end, weariness won out over his thirst. Both of the drifters passed the night quietly in deep, dreamless sleep. The aroma of strong black coffee filled the station when they got up the next morning. They eagerly sat down to the big breakfast of flapjacks, bacon, eggs, and fried potatoes that Olmsted had prepared.
Would have been any passengers on a run back to Red Butte?
Yeah, not from here. Might pick up somebody in Chino Valley for all I know. And it's always possible some pilgrim could try to catch a ride at one of the relay stations, but that only happens once in a blue moon. That'll likely be a full mail pouch for you, though. I was about to head down to the post office to pick it up. It'll still be a while before the hostlers have the coach ready to roll.
Good. That'll give us a chance to check on Mr. Carson and see how he's doing this morning.
Bo and Scratch left the station and walked down the street to the doctor's office. The medico, a short, fat, mostly bald man, told them that Thatcher Carson had gone on to his sister-in-law's house the night before, where he would be staying for a few days while he recuperated from his arm wound and while his wife cared for her ailing sister.
Yeah, whoever patched up that arm did a good job of it.
Well, that'd be me.
Have you any medical training?
What, me? Not hardly. I just had to tend to a heap of bullet wounds in my time, including some on my own carcass.
Yeah, then that practical experience served you well, sir. The injury wasn't that serious in itself, but Carson could have bled to death if you hadn't been there to help.
The Texans got directions to the place where Carson was staying, then started to leave the doctor's office, but then Scratch paused.
Yeah, whatever the sister-in-law's got that made her sick, it ain't catching, is it?
Not unless you grow some female parts, Mr. Morton.
What?
Bo and Scratch found the house without any trouble. It was a neat two-story frame dwelling on a side street with a picket fence in front and a couple of pine trees in the yard. Noah Carson answered Bo's knock on the door and burst out in a big grin at the sight of the two Texans on the porch.
Mom! It's Mr. Creel and Mr. Morton!
Please, gentlemen, come in.
Morning, ma'am. We just came by to see how your husband's doing. The doctor told us he was here.
That's right. Thatcher's injury wasn't serious enough to require that he stay at the doctor's. He's in the kitchen having breakfast. Would you care to join us?
Thanks, ma'am, but we already ate.
I wouldn't mind another cup of coffee, though.
Of course. Follow me.
Has anybody shot at you yet today?
No, not today. It ain't like somebody shoots at us every single day.
Just seems like it sometimes.
Yeah. Heck, sometimes we go a week or more without getting into a gunfight.
A gunfight? Every week? I can't even imagine.
And you never shall.
Claire brought them into the kitchen where Thatcher Carson was sitting at a table with his wounded arm in a black silk sling.
I thought I heard Noah mention your names. How are you today?
We're fine. Question is, how are you?
Oh, my arm's rather stiff and sore. Hurts like blazes at times, in fact. But I suppose that's to be expected when you've been shot.
Yeah, it ain't never what you'd call a pleasant experience. Doc says you're gonna be fine with a little rest, so.
Yes, I just hope that's not too much of a problem for Claire. Now she has to care not only for her sister, but for me as well.
I'm used to it. Please sit down, gentlemen.
It's a problem for the superintendent at the mine, too. I really need to be there.
Well, surely the place can get along without you for a little while.
Well, under normal conditions, yes. But right now... never mind. You men shouldn't have to concern yourselves with my problems. You've done enough for me already, just by saving my life and the lives of my family.
We're just glad we were there to help. Is there anything else we can do?
As a matter of fact, there is. I've written a note for Mr. Flynn, the superintendent at the Pitchfork. Would you mind delivering it to him? I suppose I could put it in the mail pouch, but I thought if you could take it to him personally, that would speed things up.
Why, sure. We'd be glad to, wouldn't we, Bo?
That's right. As a matter of fact, I've been a mite curious about that mine. I wouldn't mind taking a look at it. And delivering your note will give us a good excuse to do that, Mr. Carson.
Well, excellent. I appreciate it, gentlemen. Claire, if you could fetch that envelope from the dresser in the bedroom?
Of course, darling. I'll just look in on Helen, too, while I'm upstairs, if that's all right. It won't take but a minute.
Are you sure you have time to wait like this?
Stage ain't leaving without us.
You think those outlaws are gonna try to hold up the stage again today?
I sure hope not. Yesterday was bad enough.
Yeah, and you won't have my pa to help you fight him off today. He killed some of them, you know.
Remember, Noah, we said we weren't going to talk about that.
Yeah, but I think it's really good. It's not every kid who's got a pa who gunned down some owl hoots.
Please, don't let your mother hear you talking like that. She's already upset enough about everything that's happened.
I'll be quiet, but you've got to keep your promise and get me a gun one of these days so you can teach me how to shoot.
You'd probably be better off having someone like Mr. Creel or Mr. Morton teach you.
It's not likely we'll be around Red Butte that long.
Why not?
Well, hombres like us, we're what you call fettle-footed. That means we don't like to stay in one place for too long. Always gotta be moving on after a while.
Well, I hope you don't leave Red Butte before I get back there.
There's a good chance we'll still be there for a while yet.
Claire Carson returned to the kitchen a moment later with a square sealed envelope that she handed to Bo, who slipped it into his coat pocket.
We won't put this in the mail pouch, Mr. Carson. It'll go straight to Mr. Flynn at the mine just as soon as we get a chance to ride out there. Probably be tomorrow morning, since we won't get back to Red Butte until almost nightfall.
Oh, that'll be fine. Thank you.
Carson shook hands with both of them, using his good hand. Bo and Scratch drained the rest of their coffee, told Mrs. Carson they were much obliged, and that they hoped her sister got to feeling better soon, and then left the house after tousling Noah's hair and waving so long to the boy.
It's sort of interesting the way Carson was acting like something was going on out at that mine.
I was thinking the same thing.
You reckon it could have anything to do with this whole mess involving Judson Rutledge and Miss Abigail?
Right offhand, I don't see how it could, but anything's possible. I got a hunch that something is tying all this together.
Maybe that note Carson wrote to the mine superintendent would explain a few things.
And that envelope is sealed.
Envelopes can be steamed open.
Wouldn't be right.
We've been known to bend the law a time or two, and we had to. And something needed done, and there wasn't no other way to do it.
This isn't like that. Carson put his faith in us to deliver that note. And I'm sure if he intended for us to open it and read it, he would have said so.
But he didn't say not to.
You're just an old reprobate, you know that?
I've been called worse. Many a time, in fact.
But we're still not opening that letter.
Scratch just shrugged. He'd go along with Bo. For now. The hostlers had the fresh team hitched up by the time the Texans returned to the stage station, and Olmsted had the mail pouch he had gotten at the post office. Bo and Scratch watched him stow it in the box under the driver's seat and fasten the lock. Neither of them said anything about the message Thatcher Carson had given to them to be delivered to the superintendent of the Pitchfork Mine.
You handling the team again?
Seemed to work out all right yesterday. I don't see any reason to change.
Me neither. So long, Olmsted.
Be careful, you two.
Get up there.
With a slap of leather, Bo started the team moving. With the Verde River so close, the streets in Cottonwood were watered on a regular basis, so the stagecoach didn't raise much dust as it rolled out of the settlement, heading west. It was hard to leave the green, tree-covered slopes of the foothills behind and head back out into the mostly arid flats. Even though the temperature wasn't really that much different, it just seemed cooler and more pleasant in Cottonwood. But the way to Red Butte lay westward, and so did their responsibilities for now. So Bo and Scratch headed west, swaying on the seat as the stagecoach rocked gently back and forth. The eyes of both men were constantly moving, roving back and forth over the landscape around them as the terrain flattened out and grew more barren of vegetation. They were looking for any sign of an ambush. As Bo hauled back on the reins and brought the team to a stop in front of the Chino Valley stage station, he saw a man sitting on the ground, knees drawn up as he leaned against the wall of the building. A quirly dangled from his lips, and a saddle sat on the ground beside him. He wore an old gun belt with a black-handled revolver in the holster. The brim of his battered old hat was pulled down so that Bo and Scratch couldn't see his eyes at first, but then he lifted his head and tipped it back so he could look at the coach. The man, who was dressed in worn range clothes, began climbing to his feet. The station manager emerged from the building and raised a hand in greeting.
Howdy, boys. Any trouble between here and Cottonwood?
Not this morning. Trip was smooth as silk.
Well, what happened yesterday?
Judson's gang jumped us.
Good Lord, not again. Were either of you hurt?
No, not us. But that fella riding inside the coach took a bullet through the arm.
You mean Mr. Carson from Red Butte? Dad, come. Was he hurt bad?
He'll be all right. He's staying in Cottonwood for a few days to recuperate before he goes back to Red Butte, though. That's why we don't have any passengers today.
Well, you got one now. That fella right there bought a ticket a little while ago.
Yeah, but now I'm not sure whether I want to go or not. I've been listening, and sounds like this coach is a magnet for trouble.
We'll make it through just fine, mister. Don't you worry about that.
I don't know. This coach looks like it's been through a war, or at least a battle.
Those holes will be patched up once we get back to Red Butte.
I'm sure they will. I didn't mean any offense, fellas. Name's Cochran. I'd be obliged if you'd let me ride to Red Butte with you.
Don't have much choice, seeing as how you bought a ticket already. We'll be leaving as soon as we had something to eat and the team has changed.
Fine. All right if I put my saddle back in the boot?
Yeah, go ahead.
Bo and Scratch climbed down from the seat while Cochran stowed his saddle. He followed them into the station. The station manager's Mexican wife had food waiting for them, this time bowls of a thick, savory stew instead of beans and tortillas. Cochran didn't eat anything, just lounged at a table in the corner and smoked.
Did that hombre eat earlier before we got here?
No, señor.
I think maybe he only have enough money to buy a ticket to Red Butte.
I don't like to see a fellow going hungry, even when I don't particularly like him.
Mm-hmm. I'll take you the same thing.
Well, as long as we're in agreement. Why don't you come join us, mister? Senora's got a whole pot of that stew, and it's mighty good.
No, thanks. I'm all right.
If it's a matter of money, Scratch and I will stand you a meal. We don't like to see anybody going hungry.
That's mighty kind of you.
I'm not trying to be kind. That's just simple human decency.
That's true. I'm much obliged, Mr.
Creel. Bo Creel. That's Scratch Morton.
Good to meet you.
Cochran followed Bo over to the long table. Scratch had already motioned for the station manager's wife to bring another bowl of stew. She had it sitting on the table with a spoon next to it, waiting for Cochran when he got there.
Fellow with a saddle but no horses usually had a run of bad luck.
That's true enough. I was on my way to Red Butte when my horse stepped in a damn hole and broke its leg. I had to shoot the poor bastard. It was just lucky for me it happened only a couple miles out of the settlement here. I was able to get my saddle off and hoof it on in, but I gotta tell you, even that's a long walk for a fella like me who ain't used to traveling, Shanksmare.
Mm-hmm. You riding the grub line, are you?
Yeah. I heard there's some good spreads over on the eastern slopes of the Santa Marias, and I'm hoping that one of them will be hiring. If not, I'll try the mine they got over there. I've turned my hand to mining a time or two in my life. Not as good at it as cowboying, but anything that puts grub in the old belly, right, boys?
I reckon.
Yeah, as long as you got a saddle, you ought to be able to get a riding job. Of course, ain't roundup time right now, but maybe one of the spreads will be looking for a man.
I'll keep my fingers crossed. You fellas wouldn't happen to know any of the ranch foremen over in those parts, would you? I thought maybe you could put in a good word for me.
Sorry. We haven't been in these parts for very long ourselves. We haven't gotten to know very many people yet.
Oh. You ain't the regular driver and guard on this stagecoach run?
Nah, this is our first time to make it. We've been from Red Butte to Cottonwood, and now we're on our way back.
I get you. The stage line wouldn't need a good man, would it?
You'd have to ask the owner about that.
But you'd put in a good word for me with him, wouldn't you?
Owner's a her. Mrs. Abigail Sutherland.
A woman? Say, you ain't joshing me, are you? I never heard of a woman owning any business before, let alone a stage line.
It's the truth. Her husband started the line, but he passed away a while back.
Oh, sorry to hear that. She probably does need help then. I'll be sure to talk to her if I don't catch on at one of the ranches around there. I think I'd rather work around stagecoaches than go back to mining. Never did care for holes in the ground. Far as I'm concerned, there ain't no really good reason to go down in one of those until you're dead. You know what I mean?
They finished the meal, cleaning their bowls of the stew, and Bo gave the manager's wife a coin to pay for all three of them. As he was doing that, the manager came back into the station and reported that the fresh team was hitched to the stage.
You fellas be mighty careful. Judson's bunch might jump you again. They can be mighty persistent varmints when they want to be.
I'm not worried too much about it. If I remember the country between here and Red Butte, and I ought to since we just traveled through it yesterday, there are a lot fewer places where that gang could spring an ambush. If they come after us, chances are we'll see them coming quite a ways off.
Well, good luck anyway. You sure you still want to go, mister? You can hang on to that ticket you bought and use it later if you want.
I trust Bo and Scratch here. Anyway, from what I've heard, it's liable to be just as dangerous another time as long as that outlaw Judson is on the loose.
Yeah, you got a point there. Come on.
They went outside. Bo checked the harness on the horses, not because he didn't trust the hostlers who worked there, but simply because a man always checked the gear he was going to be using himself before he put his full trust in it. Satisfied that the team was hitched up properly, he climbed to the driver's seat. Cochran reached up to open the coach door, but he paused before climbing in.
It's gonna be mighty hot and stuffy in there, fellas. Mind if I ride up top with you? I don't mind sitting on the roof.
Yeah, it ain't very pleasant riding inside when the weather's this hot. At least up top you can get some breeze.
All right, climb up, Cochran.
The cowboy grinned as he pulled himself to the driver's seat and then clambered onto the roof of the coach. He turned around facing front and sat with his knees pulled up, much like he had done when he was leaning against the wall of the station. He didn't have anything behind him now to brace him, though. Scratch climbed onto the seat beside Bo and settled himself with the scatter gun across his knees again. Bo untied the reins from the brake lever and released the brake.
Get up there! Go!
The three men on the stage waved farewell to the manager and the hostlers as the stage rolled away from the station.
I sure appreciate you paying for that bowl of stew, Bo. I don't mind admitting that I'm busted. Used the last of my dinero to buy my ticket on the stage. I was hoping that when I get to Red Butte, I could find somebody to stake me until I find a job.
Neither of the Texans responded to that hint. As far as they were concerned, they had done enough favors already for Cochran. The cowboy seemed to be unable to keep his mouth shut for more than a few minutes at a time. Like a lot of men in solitary professions, when he was around other people, he liked to talk. He rambled on to Bo and Scratch, telling them about places he had been, ranches where he had worked, and women he had known. Scratch could be pretty talkative himself at times, so he tolerated Cochran's long-winded gab and tried to show an interest. Bo just ignored it, for the most part. They were back in the flat, arid country now. If the outlaws wanted to ambush the stage again, about the only place they could hide to do so would be in one of the dry washes that slashed through the terrain every so often. Bo kept a close eye on each of those arroyos as the stage approached it. The coach's wheels rattled over one of the plank bridges, about halfway between Chino Valley and the last relay station this side of Red Butte. Bo glanced both ways along the wash as they crossed it, but didn't see anything suspicious. The arroyo took a sharp bend about 100 yards north of the stage road, though, so he couldn't see any farther than that in that direction. His instincts warned him that anybody could have been hiding around that bend in the wash, so when the stagecoach was about 50 yards beyond the bridge, Bo glanced back, looking past the still jabbering Cochran. He wasn't really surprised to see horsemen lunging their mounts up the banks of the wash next to the bridge to start galloping after the coach.
Scratch! Behind us!
Scratch started to twist around and lift the shotgun. But before he could do so, Cochran put his left hand down on the coach roof to brace himself and used his right to yank the black-handled pistol from the holster on his hip.
Hold it! Stop this coach, Creel, or I'll blow both of you old pelicans right off it!
Bo never trusted Cochran, so he started moving as soon as he looked back and spotted the outlaws coming after them. He snatched the whip from its socket at the same time as Cochran reached for his gun, and he struck with it even as the words were coming out of the gunman's mouth. The gun in Cochran's hand roared as his trigger finger contracted involuntarily. But Scratch had already slammed the barrels of the shotgun against his wrist and knocked the gun out of line. The bullet screamed off harmlessly to the side. Scratch brought the shotgun back around and slammed the barrels against Cochran's jaw. The blow sent the treacherous gunman rolling toward the edge of the coach. Cochran's legs went off the coach, and he had to drop his gun and make a desperate grab at the brass rail to keep from plunging all the way off. His momentum carried him all the way over the edge, and he wound up dangling on the side of the coach, hanging onto the rail for dear life as his booted feet kicked at empty air. They tried to find a purchase on the side of the coach, but kept sliding off.
Get up there! Go! Go!
Meanwhile, Bo urged the team on to greater speed, popping the whip and calling out to the horses. They were still relatively fresh, so they responded eagerly, straining against their harness. The coach began to bounce and sway more as it raced along the road.
You know, we could make better time if we didn't have any dead weight holding us back!
Bo glanced back and saw Cochran's fingers clinging to the rail. The gunman's head was below the level of the roof, so the fingers were all Bo could see of him. Scratch turned around and leaned back with the shotgun, slamming the twin barrels down on the fingers of Cochran's left hand, probably breaking one or two of them. Cochran let go with that hand. He had to know what was coming next, but instinct kept his right hand clamped around the rail. Seconds later, Cochran was gone, his desperate yell swallowed up by the pounding hoofbeats. Scratch squinted back through the swirling dust and caught a glimpse of the man rolling over limply before coming to a stop in a motionless sprawl. It could be that Cochran had broken his neck when he fell, or he might just be knocked out. Scratch didn't much care either way. With that chore taken care of, he swapped the shotgun for the Winchester, as he had the day before, and climbed onto the coach roof to open fire on the pursuers. The outlaws had gotten enough of Scratch's deadly accuracy with the rifle during the previous fight, so they gave up the chase fairly quickly this time, throwing a few last futile shots at the coach as it sped away.
I don't think any of that lead even hit us this time. Did you already know that no good Cochran was working with Judson's bunch before he threw down on us?
Not for sure, but I had an idea he might be. At first, I thought he was just a drifting cowhand like he claimed. I wouldn't have bought any grub for him otherwise. But it occurred to me a ways back that Judson might try a trick like that.
Yeah, glad it did. That varmint looked mighty surprised when you caught him across the face with that whip.
Did you see him after he fell?
Yeah! He bounced a time or two, but he didn't move after that.
Bo shook his head. He didn't feel any real regret that Cochran might have lost his life in the incident. The man was an owl hoot and a killer, after all, and had threatened to ventilate him and Scratch. But he didn't take any particular pleasure in the knowledge, either. Bo kept the team moving at a fast clip until the outlaws had fallen completely out of sight. And even after that, he didn't slow back to a normal pace until the coach had covered another mile or so. Then he let the horses walk and catch their breath. The rest of the trip to the next relay station was peaceful. The hostler there didn't ask any questions, and Bo and Scratch didn't volunteer any information. They figured they would have to be telling what happened during the trip soon enough, when they reached Red Butte.